Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Iroquois Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
It's time for the Round Table with Round Daddy.
Hey, Round Daddy.
The Round Table with Round Daddy.
Me, James Strebel, Big Daddy.
With your host, James Strebel.
Hey, Round Daddy, James Strebel. Gotcha.
On ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Stoops, keep Cal's name out your bleeping mouth.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's exactly. No, because I was Team Stoops. You know that. I mean, we when all that went off, we talked back and forth, and I was like, I'm Team Stoops.
You did. Yep.
Team UK, yes. No. Shut your bleeping mouth. Shut up.
Just think, a year later, 2 years later, Justin Jeffries would be stuck in a soybean field from that moment.
And Cal's now in Arkansas.
Cal's in Arkansas. Amazing what time does. It's the Round Table. Max Gabby, Jeff Whitesey in today. Strebel in New York, living up AAU baseball.
So Niagara Falls, Cooperstown.
Oh, he's doing it all. He's living it up, man. He's not missing us at all. But he'll be back next week. It'll be Jeff and I today, and then Anna and I tomorrow and Wednesday. So we've got a jam-packed show for both Tuesday and Wednesday. Bunch of special guests coming in. Just talk football, talk shop. And you asked me beforehand, the hardest player to block, and it's a name that not a lot of people know, but he was without a doubt one of the most aggressive, strongest players that I've ever played against. But his career was so short-lived. It's a gentleman named Kelsey Quarles from South Carolina, number 99. This was one of the first times when playing against him. So to set the stage, Zach West was hurt for two games. Mm-hmm. I started in 2013 against Florida. And then I started the road game against South Carolina. And that was my first ever road game start. I had played in road games, but that was my first start at one. Especially, this ain't Ching Beamer fake energy South Carolina. This is Spurrier ranked in the top 10 on a Saturday night. Middle of September, early October. Yeah. Like this is a hostile environment, and it was just so loud. It is to this day the loudest place I've ever played.
Wow.
The most
South Carolina.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, South Carolina. Ask Justin, because Justin will say the same thing. It is one of the most just disgracefully underrated places to play because of that fan base gets so loud. The humidity, it's not like Gainesville humidity, but there is a humidity in the air that you're just not used to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you
Columbia
are,
gets hot. I've been to Columbia several times. It gets warm.
Yes, it does. It gets toasty, especially when you're a fat guy. It ain't very forgiving. And when you're backed up against when you are backed up against their student section, that is one of the most hostile student sections.
Wow.
And then And also, they play that stupid rooster crow that is so annoying. I've told the story on air before. Where I live now, there's a farm across from ours, and they have one rooster that crows when it usually crows about 6:15, and I'm usually outside at that point. And when it crows, I kid you not, it sounds exactly like that exact same rooster. And you PTSD kicks in every single time. I am back in Columbia, South Carolina as soon as that happens.
Wow.
Each and every time. But line up, and Jadeveon Clowney was not playing that game. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. And I had watched film on Quarles. And I
was
like,
guard or center?
I'm playing left guard.
I'm playing
left guard that game. And I had watched the film on him, and I was like, he's slow, but he has quick hands. I was like, his hands are like, I've never seen a defensive lineman get their hands up so quick, because the move that he would use, he would try to grab the offensive lineman's arm or grab their hands. And at that point, if you're an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman gets to your hands or your chest, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing you can do at that point.
Take wherever you want.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had always prided myself, and, you know, you may be able to physically beat me, but you're not going to beat me because of bad technique.
Yeah.
Like, my technique's going to be better than yours.
Mm-hmm.
And the first play that he lined up on my side, I went to get a combination block with Darian Miller, who was playing at left tackle. And when I went to post-step into his center chest plate and grab his chest plate, all of a sudden, I don't know what had happened, but he had grabbed my wrist.
Uh-oh.
He had got a hold of my wrist, and you talk about a death grip. Like, I thought he was breaking my wrist. And no one has ever been able to catch these hands. No one's ever been able to catch my hands before. And he, and all of a sudden just jerked my hand down, really did a weird funky thing with my shoulder and blew up the play.
Wow.
And
Stoops wasn't happy about that.
Oh, dude, Schlarman was pissed. And Darian looks at me, and I kid you not, and I don't know why to this day, but that mentally played with me the entire game. Because literally the next play, it was 3rd and 15, and we were backed up. I mean, backed up. To that student section. And it had gotten so loud that we could not hear each other talk.
Wow.
Like, we could not communicate as an offensive line. And they stunted from a 4-3 to a bare front. So a guy on the center, two defensive linemen on both the guards, and two defensive ends on the tackles. And he lines up as a really close shade, almost head up on me. And I kick set. I don't do a kick set. I do what's called kind of a drop set, where you almost like pedal back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, I thought, okay, I've got enough room for me. He's not going to be able to grab my hands. And I went to shoot my hands. And this dude... the exact same wrist grabs my left wrist and shoots my arm straight up in the air.
Oh, my goodness.
And pushes me, like, and torques me back. And I don't have any power in my left foot. And I'm panicking. Because at this point, he's driving me. He's driving me back on national television.
Wow.
On a sold-out crowd. And all I can do, I'm in full-scale panic. All I could do, I grabbed him by his face mask with my other hand, and I pulled him down. I was like, I'm going to get a holding call before he gets to the quarterback. And so I pull him down and get him to the ground. I'm flat on my back, and I'm just like, there's no way this could get any worse. And somehow, either his foot or his other hand was able to sweep out and swipe Jalen Whitlow's feet and got the sack. and you talk about the utter disgust, the utter feeling 2 feet tall I have ever felt in my entire life was because of Kelce Quarles, and he was in my head the rest of that game. And I don't know what was worse about that, was that not only was he a first-team All-SEC, he was also rated as a second-team All-American and a first-team All-American, depending on which one you looked at. But he got in so much trouble while he was at South Carolina. And because of all the behavioral stuff, he wound up going undrafted and went to the Giants. And he just hopped around from New England. He was with the Colts, and then he played in the CFL for a minute as well. And I think that's the part more that just drives me nuts about how bad he beat me that game, was that he couldn't get himself out of it'd be different if it was like a Ndamukong Suh that just played for decades in the NFL. It's like, well, I lost to him. It's like, well, the dude's got a mound of dead offensive linemen that he's taken out. But this guy had so much potential and just kind of squandered it away to where he really didn't get to do much after playing. So Kelce Quarles to this day was the most difficult player that I've ever played against. But I mean, Dante Fowler Jr. was another one that was really good. And then mad respect for CJ Mosley. CJ Mosley was a heck of a linebacker. I mean, it's so smart. I mean, he basically could read John Toth's mind, which is wild. I mean, every single time he would do something, he would be able to decode exactly what Toth was trying to do, or the play that Toth was trying to call, and he would change it. Just every single time, knew exactly what Toth was going to do each time. And then I'm trying to think who else. Clinton Dix was really, really good.
He was tough.
Mississippi State's 2014 defensive line was the biggest defensive line that I've ever seen in my entire life. I low key that's,
during your playing time, how big were you? Height, weight?
6'4" and about. I played majority of my career at 295, and okay. Then, but my last year.
So a big defensive line for a guy that's 6'4", 300, let's just call
exactly.
It is a big defense.
Dude, yeah, he was probably close to the, they had two defensive linemen for Mississippi State that year that were 6'6", both 330, 340.
Wow.
I mean, just monsters. And I remember just lining up and just going, oh. When their linebackers are as big, they had, I can't remember the guy's name that played for Mississippi State. He gave me a concussion that game.
Oh, my goodness.
Snod. He went by Turtle, but he had no neck. We wound up being really good friends for a while after we were done playing, and then we just lost lost connection over time, but he was a fast linebacker, but mm-hmm. He was probably close to 250 as a linebacker and just full head of steam. He's the one when we tried to kick the onside kick, get the ball back to be able to beat number one Mississippi State. Mm-hmm.
This is the Dak Prescott year?
This is Dak Prescott year. He caught the onside kick on a weird bounce and ran it straight into the end zone, to where Mississippi State wins by 2 scores instead of, they were only up at 7 at that point. And then Stoops said if we did get the onside kick and scored, we were going to go for two
for the win.
But it was crazy. But it was, gosh, and just to think that. Like Dak Prescott, like how long he's been in the league now.
Yeah.
The game has changed so much since 2014. It's just, it's wild.
So
just wild.
So Quarles. Quarles was the hardest, and he's able to just grab. Had anybody up until that point ever been able to grab your hands like that?
No. No.
And six, not even
after that. No. I mean, even the likes of, oh gosh, what's his name? The Sam Ray. I think it was Sam Ray for Missouri, because Sam Ray and Michael Sam were the two quickest defensive ends that.
Shane Ray.
You. Yeah. The two quickest defensive ends I've ever played against. Mm. And they were really good to get at your hands, but they weren't strong enough to where they could just knock them down. It was, they would slap and I'd be able to recover really quickly. Never, not even an Alabama player has been able to just grab my wrist and just dictate where I go.
Wow.
I mean, you talk about emasculating. It was just like, it played so much in my head that game that at that point I was just, it was one of the worst games I ever played.
Man, it is also interesting to hear you talk about South Carolina, like how that environment was, like in Columbia when Steve Spurrier's got them rolling, good team, and they had obviously really good players, a ton of players come out of South Carolina
and
too.
I've been back to South Carolina since that game, and even on bad seasons, it is still electric.
Wow.
That is still an electric environment. I would say loudest places. It's South Carolina for me is still one because that was just such a hostile environment. Then I would go Death Valley. Then probably the Swamp. Swamp is to me is just so overrated.
That's interesting. What makes you say that? Because you hear, well, as a fan, I've never been there, but like you hear about how tough it is to play there, and it's the Swamp, and it's SEC, it's Florida. Why is it overrated?
Well, it's a janky stadium for one.
Okay.
Like it's and that's a lot of these old stadiums.
Yeah.
They just keep building on top of the stadiums, and they don't do really great renovations. Say whatever you want about Kroger Field,
but that's
one thing they've done, and that's what they did with L&N Stadium. They don't just build over it.
Yeah.
They actually remodel it. But like Knoxville, because Coach Nealon drank out of a lead pipe there. That lead pipe's got to stay there forever now. Death Valley, though, is extremely nice. That one's an extremely nice stadium. The thing about Florida that's so weird is the play clock. Because the play clock in every stadium's in the exact same spot, dead center of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's the only one. It's in the top left corner.
Wow.
Which you would not think that would play.
But it throws you off a little bit.
Because you get caught in a panic because you're used to something being right there. You're able to call your plays, and then you look up just to see how much time you got. And all of a sudden, you look up, and it's not there. And you go, oh, wait, where'd it go?
Because we're all creatures of habit, especially during football games. I imagine high-stakes, high-level football games. You're used to one thing. You look up, and it's not there. And even though you just move your eyes a little bit to the left, you'll see it. But it's just like, okay, where is it at? Like,
exactly.
What are we doing?
You just go into a full panic mode. Louisville's is loud. I will give Cardinal Stadium or L&M back then it was Papa John Stadium. I will give it all the credit in the world. It's a loud environment, but to me there's a difference between loud and like a piercing loud. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that as an insult
this
in any
true.
Way, shape, or form. Like South Carolina is piercing loud. The Swamp is piercing loud. Tennessee is loud. Tennessee's very loud, but it's because of the volume of people.
It's a lot of people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much the seats inside the stadium where they're plastic, how much that does play an effect on it. Because, again, it's less things that are able to reverb off of as well. Now, when UK and Louisville played this year, that's my first time being in the state. That's my first time being back at inside of that stadium since I played there in 2014. It'd been 10 years and it was or 9 years and it was very loud. And that was me sitting at the very top. Like I wasn't like towards the field to really get the sense of how loud it was. And I think in closing it has really helped it out as well.
Yeah.
I'd love to in 2 years when UK's back there to sit lower and try to stand on the concourse instead to be able to be able to hear
it. It was loud in there.
Yes.
Like as someone, I was in the press box for a little bit and then was on the field, and I mean that game was really, really loud. Like it was, and it was a better performance as far as like crowd participation and stuff. Probably the best all year. And they had
better than Notre Dame, you think?
Notre Dame was different because it was a blowout. So they were loud.
Or like at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Like at the beginning, it was awesome, especially on Jawar's big run. They kind of broke out. But because the Kentucky game was so back and forth, especially all the way up into the end, it was super, super loud when a big play happened because a big play mattered more.
Right.
Notre Dame 22-0. It's kind of right. Like, you know, the big plays matter more at the beginning. Towards the end, you knew you had it wrapped up. UK, big plays happening, especially towards the end. It's like, oh my God, like, this is insane. Like, this is a rivalry game. This is Kentucky. This is back and forth. This is for the Governor's Cup to not try to lose five in a row. So it was super, super loud in there for sure.
That's to me, and I'd sound like a broken record on this, but the Bluegrass rivalry and the battle for the Governor's Cup, not even the UofL-UK basketball game. I think that gets as much media rights as it does. Mm-hmm. But so many people just underrate the battle for the Governor's Cup as a rivalry than I think of any other rivalry. Like it is a rivalry that is so hostile. It has the animosity, and it's so much different. I'm not comparing it to Ohio State and Michigan. I'm not comparing it to the Iron Bowl. But the amount of these two fan bases that intermingle so much, and how much of the family ties, the friend ties, all of it. It is such a hostile rivalry, but it's turned into this I thought it was the worst idea ever to move it from the beginning of the year to the Thanksgiving weekend. I thought it was dumb.
Yeah, I always enjoyed it more when it was at the beginning. I feel like it set the tone for the season.
Right.
That game. Like, I mean, the most putrid UofL memory is the Stevie Johnson wide open. Just,
right.
Oh, my God, I can't believe nobody is covering. Like, I remember where I was at, where I was watching it, what happened, and, like, all of our collective reaction when that went down. So, like, yeah, I do miss it being at the beginning versus the end.
But there's something about it being that Thanksgiving week also. Especially, it's going to be intriguing when we finally get to a point like that 07, because – No, because Kentucky was not ranked yet during that 07 game. But you get to a point where both teams are actually ranked. And I thought this year was going to be the year that both teams were going to be ranked into it. And I think Joe Tessitore and Jesse Palmer and Katie George did a great job of trying to build up what type of rivalry this was on their pregame stuff and get – kind of giving the right context for it, because it is to me and the UK Tennessee rivalry is hostile as well. But again, there's something about when those two teams play, and you could feel that animosity on the field. You could feel the energy leading up to it, and I think even more now, to where you have instances where you have a chance at a college football playoff on the line. Now, when you have at the end of the year, now the stakes have gotten so much higher.
I agree
that it now amplifies it even more.
Yeah, no, I 100%, because that is the thing that it does provide now with it being at the end, because you have a 12-team playoff, because you know it could determine whether. I mean, this past season. Like, it could determine if Louisville wins that Kentucky game and then wins their SEC championship game. Now you're fighting for a spot in the four-team playoff. So, like, but even 12 teams, it's even – you really are going to determine, because you legit could have that there.
If Louisville would have beaten UK that game and still lost to Florida State in the ACC championship – at that point, I think they're in to the 12-team playoff.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're definitely in at that point, which is, again, that adds a completely new element to it. Texter, I now liken it in the year, because usually Kentucky has some disappointing weeks, and they've been able to turn things around by winning that game. And that's a great point, because that's Say whatever you want about Stoops. Somehow, the past 5 years, he's figured out a way to get the guys motivated for that game.
He's owned Louisville. I mean, for 5 years in a row, Mark Stoops has owned Louisville. And that can't continue. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be Jeff Brohm, if you're going to be the one that people feel like is the one, you can't keep losing it. Now, granted, this year was just his first, but Stoops had won four before then.
Right.
But you can't make this a habit of losing to Stoops. Because that then the lure, the lust of Jeff Brohm being who a lot of Louisville fans believe he is, me included, you can't keep losing to Kentucky. Like that can't be a thing. They can't.
It's going to be intriguing to see as well, because I always make the argument, and this is a UK fan and a U of L fan talking. So take what I say with a grain of salt. I've always seen the perspective that UK. I'm trying to phrase this right. I think of when I was playing in high school. Our rival in high school is DeSales when I was playing for Christian Academy. Mm-hmm. And every time we would play DeSales, we would always be like 5-1, 7-1, and DeSales would be rolling in 3-5, 4-4, 2-6 1 year. But it's because outside of their district, which was Cal, Carroll County, and Owen County, they played 5-6A schools constantly during that time. So you would look at the record and be like, oh, they're nobody and all that. But they were a team that was battle-tested and then would just come and punch you in the mouth. Mm-mm. And you just didn't know how to recover from that. And it's kind of similar to how Kentucky, especially the past 2 years and then that 2019 year with Lynn Bowden, because mm-hmm. you have a team that I would say has more speed than Louisville had, but they were a team that were used to seeing a consistent level of talent. Not to saying that Louisville is not talented. I'm not saying that, but there's a different speed when you're playing in that conference. You see it each week in and week out.
You're playing Bama and LSU and now Texas and Oklahoma each and every single week. Mississippi State, South Carolina. Like, no, that matters.
Now, I think that runs into a counterproduction for Kentucky this year for how the gauntlet that they've got to run into this year. I think it turns into a deterrent a little bit leading up to that game.
Yeah, because we got to go. I remember JJ saying going to Texas, like to some of these schools. I want to ask you this, Max, because you play for Stoops, and we were talking about the U of L UK game. Do you have any now? What are your thoughts on the fact that Stoops almost left Kentucky? Does that bother you at all? The fact that he almost went to Texas A&M, or that was like a real thing legitimately on the board, or is it just kind of like, yeah, water under the bridge?
I feel like you're asking the wrong person, because it's to me, I know it's a business.
Yeah,
it's a business. And I get that there's sometimes you've been in a place, you love it, but you're like, I need a change of pace. I don't blame anyone for not being as loyal as I am. And I'm not saying that Coach Stoops isn't loyal, mm-hmm. but there's a difference when it's your paycheck.
Yeah,
it's some complete different. And I think he legitimately thought that he just needed a change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think for Kentucky fans, it's so much different because, again, it's not a Satterfield situation where he was talking to a coach or talking to another school. Let's carry this over onto the next one, and then that will lead into our great Governor's Cup debate that's going to be our moderator's Zach Cantrell. You're listening to The Roundtable on ESPN 680.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
This is when I fell in love with Kentucky basketball. It was because of Rick Pitino.
You're listening to the Round Table with Round Daddy. Now here's Round Daddy, James Strebel.
Welcome back to the Round Table. Max Godby and Jeff Lightsey in studio. Got a couple texts here. I'll tell you how Stoops has won 10 years in job. Anywhere else, he would have been fired by now. Bobby 2.0 collapse. Bleeping Satterfield. Not usually what's coaching at U of L. It's over, though. I trust my Brom. Years two. We got depth now. See you last game. This is Tox. Not even looking at it. It's like, this is Tox. Tox, you said the exact same thing last year, and the exact same thing happened. UK went in there, and Buttermilk Stoops whooped you. Just straight up whooped you, and then he pointed at you up at the top of L&N Stadium and said, that was for you, Tox. Tox, I love you. Texter, Max, quit sugarcoating and just say that SEC is better than the stinky ACC. I mean, yes, but I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be civil in a very uncivil era in time. I'm telling you, living in Louisville has changed me a lot because I used to be as bad as Strebel.
Okay.
I used to be insufferable. Like, dude, there was no red in my closet. Like, none. Mm-hmm. I refused to wear it. Any shade of red, no. Then I started working for a company where its primary colors were red. So it kind of got eased in. And then I started working with the fine folks here at ESPN 680 that have just treated me like family. And all of you all are filthy Louisville fans and have just changed me over time. Just slowly just changing me.
So you can be easily manipulated is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, I can. I am like the average American. I can be easily manipulated into anything. So speaking of which, we're about ready to have the great Governor's Cup debate.
And, with it.
Oh, dude. And so since the Louisville system, the establishment of Louisville, see, everything's going against me right now, Zach. I'm in the belly of the beast in Louisville, Kentucky, on Louisville's campus, in a Louisville radio station against someone who's not a Kentucky fan per se, who's going to be the moderator, and everything's lined up for Jeff's success right now. Everything's lined up.
I am
for
on
him.
The Kentucky postgame show, though. So
that is very true. That's very true. But you throw digs during the Kentucky postgame show, so I don't know. I don't know how loyal you are, Zach.
I'm very loyal. I just call it like I see it. If you struggle, I say you struggle.
All right.
Like Joe's golf game, it's just bad.
Let's go ahead and get started.
And by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
And when I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
We can make our beloved country the source of all the dreams and the opportunities that she was. Missed me.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
We must stop the terror. I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
We used to be a proper country. We used to tell people to stop terrorism before we argued about golf. How about that? Underrated MVP by the way. The guy who had the camera and the mic set up perfectly so you could hear the ball perfectly.
Exactly.
I want to know how many takes that took from W to hit that drive.
Oh, my goodness. There's no telling. There's no telling. All right. Well, since Justin Jeffrey's not in, the Kentucky National Convention has decided to make me the running mate.
The delegation has chosen Max Godby
to be the UK representative. So, Zach, you've been promoted as moderator. You go ahead and take the lead.
We have a proper society. We're going to have a proper society here. We don't have a minute or two delay. We have a studio audience. We actually don't have a studio audience, but we have people that are going to listen to us. And I will cut off the mics if we have to do that. Just saying. But let's go ahead and start, guys. So both teams starting with new quarterbacks. Tyler Shook for Louisville, Brock Vandergriff for Kentucky. And, you know, Brock Vandergriff, of course, with the great gas station photo. Tyler Shook, happily married, 25 years old, blah, blah, blah. Just a little context for those guys. State why your quarterback is going to be better in the 2024 season. Let's flip. Let's see who's going to go first.
I call heads.
You call heads? Okay. Godby starts.
Let's go. Well, first of all, I want to thank Jeff Lightsey for coming in today.
I'm
looking forward to having a very civil debate with you in regards to the Governor's Cup. So we look at what Brock Vandergriff's able to bring to the table. And the first thing is youth. He's a young quarterback, young and talented, that's been in, and I have no issue of bringing it up. He's been learning under some of the greatest college football program in recent history. He worked UK like a fool as well. So that's number one. Two, I think from the way that this Bush-Hamden offense is going to be readapted to Vandergriff, I think Devin Leary was the first one to hit the wall to get the bloodiest. That way we can learn a lesson when it comes to Vandergriff.
Okay.
And that's going to be, what you're going to be able to do is adjust your offense around this player.
Okay.
And I think there's so many pros of him as a running style. Again, he's a young, healthier quarterback that Kentucky has not had since last year with Devin Leary, that you're going to be able to kind of not even outsmart yourself when it comes to using him in the proper way.
That was cute, Max. That was nice. You buttered that up. You made me almost believe in Brock Vandergriff.
Barack Vandergriff.
Brock, whatever. That was nice. Like, just that was a fancy way of saying this is a 3-year backup that's never played football at this stage as a starting quarterback ever. So, like, I like that. That was cool. Tyler Shuck, on the other hand, has started. Now, he is older. Yes, he's not young and spry and 21 and wide-eyed. But he is 25. He's married. And he's got 1 year of college football left. And he just so happened to decide to spend that 1 year with none other than Jeff Brohm. Jeff Brohm has shown us throughout the course of his decade-long head coaching career that he can make chicken salad out of chicken you know what. I saw it happen firsthand at WKU with Brandon Dowdy, who was awful before Jeff Brohm. The year under Bobby Petrino, awful. Second year, his first year under Brohm and his second year under Brohm, became a record-setting quarterback there. His jersey will probably get retired. He became the guy. I watched receivers become Taywan Taylor and Tyler Higbee and Nicholas Norris, and then also moved on to Purdue. Aiden O'Connell is now in the NFL because of Jeff Brohm. David Blau is in the NFL because of Jeff Brohm. And so I spoke to Rondale Moore. He credited part of his success because of Jeff Brohm. And so I'm saying all that to say, even though our quarterback hasn't been healthy, the biggest thing is health, right? And I will be honest, that is concerning for me too. But if he is able to stay healthy with his natural ability, his talent, he has been a starting quarterback at two other places, this guy will be able to do things with this offense that Jack Plummer just simply wasn't able to do. And that will take this offense to the next level, and it will allow Louisville to play Jeff Brohm football that they weren't able to play last year. And even without playing the football they wanted to play last year, they won 10 games. Now you have a real quarterback who can actually extend the defense, throw over the top, give you a vertical passing game that you didn't have last year. I like Tyler Shuck under Brohm and having a very, very successful year. A guy who has started games at two other places.
Am I allowed to have a rebuttal?
You can have a quick rebuttal.
Quick rebuttal. So, everything you said, again, it's good on paper. But talking from experience of someone who's had a broken quarterback before, that does not mean that they're going to be able to stay healthy.
I agree.
One issue that Louisville does have leading up to this, is you're running into the same issue that Kentucky had last year, is a depleted offensive line, for one. Two.
Is it depleted, though?
I mean, you're losing your guy at center. And leave it as a team that lost their starting center in Luke Fortner and be like, it's fine. We'll just move a guard in at center. It ends badly. It ends very badly. They did bring in
a center, though. A high-level impact starter at center. They brought him in via the transfer portal. That's the luxury of the portal. The portal, you know, take it the way, but it also giveth. And Brohm has been able to use the portal very, very well to retool that offensive line.
As he has been able to use the portal very well. I'm not going to argue that. However, we did kind of have this exact same conversation with another 1-year transfer that came in that was going to lead Louisville into new heights, and that was Jack Plummer.
Ooh, who did? Who had that conversation?
I'm sure it was. Don't fact check me on that. But I think one. I'm pretty sure it's everyone.
He got benched at Purdue. We all knew that. Ain't nobody talking about that.
Am I fact checking? I am fact checking. I'm not CNN. We fact check.
Not live feed.
Not a lot of people thought Jack Plummer was going to be great.
Yeah,
and he was a bum, just like I expected.
Yeah, I don't know if we thought Jack Plummer was going to take us to new heights.
All right, just saying. We got to go on. We got a couple more questions. We got to go to the other side of the ball. Both teams with strong defenses coming into the season. Mm-hmm. Kentucky's defense projected to be, you know, Deion Walker projected a top 5 pick, but Louisville's defense, the only local team ranking in the NCAA video game. So convince me why your team's defense is going to be the best defense in the Commonwealth.
Well, quite simple. Track record. Mm. You look at the defense that Brad White and Mark Stoops has been able to put on the field time and time again. Now, I will openly admit, last year's tried to bend, don't break. Instead, it turned into bend and break. Was not ideal. But you had a very young secondary that was playing in the backfield. Mm-hmm. The last time UK had an absolute a backfield that was extremely young like that was years that they had. Forgot all their names. But it wound up being one of the greatest secondaries they ever had. Darius West, and then we beat Medicaid. But I trust the process that they've gone in on this defense. And again, I'm going to rely on the track record of Brad White and Mark Stoops when it comes to defense. Maybe not from an offense perspective, definitely give you on that one. But from a defensive perspective, this team has always been in the top 25. And also, the biggest thing, it's been scoring defense as well.
Yeah. You guys have some players. Deion Walker is a legit first-round pick. He's legit. He'll probably end up in the top 15, top 10 maybe. J.J. Weaver, as we saw, is a monster of a man. He is a grown man. So I get that.
Lightsey, I want you to say right now, look at me and tell J.J. Weaver right in the face that he is not a good defensive player.
Oh, no, he's a monster of a man. No, trust me.
Sounds like a man who just had him in the studio. No,
he's a monster.
Don't hurt me, J.J.
Yeah, he's a monster of a man. But you did lose Andrew Phillips, a guy who was drafted, third round NFL draft. That's a high.
Yes.
It's a high draft pick, and that's a position, like, one of the key pieces to most defenses is pass rushing and cornerbacks. And you lost a corner in the third round NFL draft, highly talented, highly skilled guy. Louisville instead brought back the two best defensive players. Quincy Riley, once again, their two most important positions on defense, I think, are pass rusher and your secondary. Quincy Riley leads the secondary, a preseason All-ACC guy, potentially honorable mention type of All-American guy, and Ashton Gelati, which is a preseason All-American type of player. Those are the two biggest wins for their defense, was bringing those two guys back. The part that Louisville struggled the most, particularly at the end of the year, was the secondary. They're getting MJ Griffin back from injury. He was their starting safety 2 years ago. Last year he missed all because he got a camp injury. He's coming back. That helps you shore up what I believe was your weakest part, was your secondary, particularly at the safety position. You're expecting the growth of a guy like Stanquan Clark. They believe he is a guy, like a George Kalafelis type of guy. This was coming from Brohm, and Kalafelis ended up in the first round in the NFL draft. I think you expect more from TJ Capers. He was your 5-star guy that they really got on at the beginning of spring camp. Expect him to be an extra pass rusher, because you got to figure out who's going to be the pass rusher on the opposite side of Ashton Gelati. And I think he is a guy that can emerge. This Louisville defense was in the top 25 on the NCAA video game because they deserve to be. You added talent. You added people via the transfer portal. You're expecting guys to stand up. And this is a defense that played very, very well up until the end of last year. At the end of last year, I think they did the depth of the season, the extensiveness. You played an extra game with the ACC championship game, obviously your bowl game. I don't think they had the depth because it was a coach's first year to really sustain a 14-game season. This year, I think they do. I think they hold up a lot better, and this will be a defense that will wreak havoc because they'll need to, quite frankly, until the offense figures everything out with the new pieces, new quarterback, all that stuff. They'll need to play well, and I definitely believe that they will play well with two potential All-Americans on that side of the ball.
So we're basing everything now off of a video game. That's what we're doing. It's a defensive analysis.
So if we're doing that, we're basing off video games. That means I'm going overseas and I'm going to turn into the next fighter pilot during World War III because I'm that good on Call of Duty.
Zach, you're supposed to be the moderator.
And I'm saying that's why they had them top 25, the game, because of the returning guys, the proven commodities. You're not hoping that somebody is good. You know Jelani is good. You know Riley's good. You know MJ Griffin's good. It's hoping that some of those other guys step up their game, but you have four sure firepower pieces on that Louisville defense.
One element of UK's defense you are completely forgetting about, and I can't believe I forgot about him also because I focus more about the weakness of the secondary, is Deion Walker. Mm-hmm. And Deion Walker, by everything... every standard that you can look at, is a freak of nature.
He's a dude.
That man wrecked U of L's offensive line.
He did.
Now imagine a year later with more money and more.
A year older.
And now having to play now a new center to U of L. Granted, he'll have an entire season under his belt. But going against Deion Walker, against a more depleted Louisville offensive line that they faced last year. Again, this game will always be won in the trenches. And when you look at both the offensive lines and the defensive lines for Kentucky, that is where their staple is. That's where the bread and butter is. And they will push back very aggressively against U of L's offensive line.
You don't think Coach Brohm has had dreams or nightmares about Deion Walker? You don't think, like, after watching what he did in the game last year, they're not going to come? They're him and JJ. I mean, both of them just completely wrecked the game. But you don't think they're game planning, scheming, remembering what those two guys in particular did to them, and they won't have a game plan ready for both Deion Walker? Now, granted, you still have to go out there and execute. But there will, like, one thing is for sure, that can't happen again. The big guy in the middle and 13 on the outside can't do what they did last year, which is force fumbles, just get in the backfield consistently. They're going to scheme up an offense that tries their best. Not saying they will completely, but to neutralize particularly those two guys on that UK defense.
You know what?
We got time for one more question. We got about 5 minutes or so.
Okay, yep, go ahead.
So, you know what? I think Lightsey should start this one because I want to know why both your teams are going to win the game, but Lightsey has to defend it because... The recent track record has showed Kentucky has owned this series. So, come on, Jeff. Tell me why Louisville's snapping the streak.
It's a number of reasons. One, I went to every Louisville home game last year. And wins, losses, and everything in between. Jeff Brohm was the most upset And I went to every game when he was at Western, too. It was the most upset I've ever seen him after any game was after that loss against Kentucky. It means more to him. Any coach can tell you it's just another game. Mm-hmm. That is not just another game for that man. For someone who played at this school, for now coaches is the head coach at this school. He's coached at this school for years. This means more to him, and he understands the significance of losing five games in a row. Can't allow it to be six. He understands the faith that Louisville fans have in him. And that faith then dwindles if you consistently lose to Kentucky. So that can't happen. You can't have Kentucky fans saying, Kentucky fans will admit, they'll say they believe Brohm is a better coach than Stoops. But how can that be true if you keep losing to Stoops? And I think Brohm understands all of these things. And he will have a game plan that will be going into that final week of the regular season to go up and line up against Kentucky. Five losses in a row at the, like, Tox said, shout out to Tox. The Bobby 2.0 wins, the Satterfield wins, who's just all shucks, whatever. This is Jeff Brohm. This is a different guy. This is a guy that takes this game very, very seriously. He will not allow Louisville to lose a sixth game in a row to Kentucky. That's how strongly I feel. And if we feel that Brohm is the coach that can take Louisville football to the next level, it starts with ending this losing streak to Kentucky.
Great points. Just because you want to win a game really badly doesn't mean you get to win the game.
Oh, they got the guys on the field, too, to do it. Let's not forget. I just didn't mention the players, but them guys are there, too.
So, the game is won in the trenches, mm-hmm. as cliche as it sounds. UK, every single time, and I will be respectful of the conference that the University of Louisville is, but there is a substantial talent gap between the trenches of the SEC and the trenches of the ACC. There just is. That's just a gospel truth. Secondly, you are now playing this game in Lexington.
Yes.
It's going to be loud. It's going to be very loud. Mm-hmm. It will be a hostile environment for Louisville. Thirdly, and I think probably the most important aspect of this, there is not one person on that team that knows how to beat Kentucky because they've never experienced beating Kentucky before. It's one thing, speaking as someone who's been a part of losing records, me, of losing to Florida, of the losing streak to Tennessee, it is extremely difficult to get the morale, just get the morale to be able to get the boost, to be able to go and beat a team when no one either on the staff or anyone on the team already has ever beaten that opponent before. And
The staff has. There's plenty of U of L guys. They haven't beat them since they've been at Louisville. They've only been at Louisville 1 year. But a lot of those guys played at Louisville. Ryan Brohm knows how to beat Kentucky. Jeff Brohm knows how to beat Kentucky. Deion Branch knows how to beat Kentucky. Like, these guys have beat UK
before. Good point. Mm-hmm. But they were also used to playing a different Kentucky team. This is a Kentucky team with a much different identity now. And you can make the jokes.
I've been told Mark Stoops' teams have always been milquetoast. Fact checker over here.
Anyway, to the point is Kentucky has changed their identity in the SEC. And you can make the jokes of it being a middle of the road SEC team all you want. But at the end of the day, the team now has the background and the prowess of being a physical team. Mm-hmm. Probably a little too physical at times. But this is a team that understands this win. And when you say that, you know, Brohm really understands this, Brohm really wants to win this, Stoops does also.
I agree.
At this point, for Stoops, it's not about winning anymore. It's not losing it now. It's more of a Michael Jordan effect on it. I can't enjoy the win. I just don't want to lose it.
Now,
final statements, gentlemen. Let's wrap it up.
So, for my final statement, I think this version of the Louisville team will look more like the versions of Louisville football that Jeff Brohm wants to play. I think they'll be able to air it out. I think they'll have a complimentary running game. And I think, honestly, they'll lean on the defense in the early weeks. Because of the continuity and the star power on the defensive side of the ball, MJ Griffith, Ashton Gelati, Quincy Riley, etc., they will lean on those guys in the early weeks of the season until Tyler Shuck and the rest of the offense really figures things out, because it is a new quarterback with his first year in this offensive system. I like the defense a ton, and with that, if you give me a good defense and tell Jeff Brohm to figure out the offense, I like that version of a team because I've seen what he's able to do with subpar, at times even below average quarterback play, Jack Plummer being one, and he won 10 games with it. This streak ends this year. I definitely think Louisville takes home the Governor's Cup because although Stoops and Kentucky has won 5 in a row, before their 5 in a row, they had lost 5 in a row. So, like, it's not, yeah, they know how to win it, but they also know how to lose it, too. And I think this guy is the one to bring back the losing to Kentucky, that being Jeff Brohm, and brings back the Governor's Cup to Louisville.
Fortunately, we have to leave it at that, gentlemen, that it's in the hands of the voters now. You did your nations very proud today.
Jeff, I appreciate you so much for joining
me
today.
Thanks for having me.
This was such a fun show. Big shout out to Coach Mike Cassidy for coming on, and everyone listening. And Justin, wherever you are in that soybean field, we're praying for you, man. You've been listening to ESPN 680. This has been the Roundtable with Round Daddy, and also producer Zach. Thank you so much for everything. You've been listening to the Roundtable on ESPN 680.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.